Before we begin, just a quick note. If this conversation about alcohol, identity, and desire resonates, my new book, What Are You Thirsty For? Rethinking Alcohol and the Life You Want, is out now. And if you want to go deeper, slowly, thoughtfully, and in ways that genuinely nourish you, I've opened the Thirsty For More Mindset Lab on Substack. You'll find links to both in the show notes. Right. Let's get on with the episode. Welcome to the Big Drink Rethink, the podcast for anyone questioning their relationship with alcohol or simply wondering what more life might hold. I'm Anna Donaghy, alcohol mindset coach, author, and former strategist, and each episode is going to blend lived experience, psychological insight, and powerful tools to help you understand your habits and gently rethink your drinking in a way that throws open oodles of possibilities. So whether you're trying to quit, cut down, or you're just plain curious, then you are in the right place. Let's rethink things together and explore what you're really thirsty for. So hello and welcome back to the Big Drink Rethink. Now, sometimes when people rethink their relationship with alcohol, they assume that the change has to begin with alcohol itself, that the first move is to remove it and then work out what fills the space. But sometimes the shift begins somewhere else entirely, and sometimes life starts to offer us something more nourishing, and alcohol quietly begins to lose its role. That is the premise of my book, What Are You Thirsty For? And the goal of my Thirsty For More coaching program, a life where alcohol effectively becomes redundant with no job to do. Now, today, my guest is Belinda Coker, and her story demonstrates this perfectly. Belinda is an Australian hiker, writer, and educator who helps women in midlife rebuild confidence and freedom through real-world adventure. And after years of building businesses and raising three children, she began hiking simply to find space and perspective when her life began to unravel. What followed took her far, far beyond her first pair of hiking boots, from multi-day hikes in Australia's rugged red centre to solo crossings of Greenland in the Arctic Circle. Now, those experiences shaped her belief that confidence grows through action, challenge, not theory. And today, she loves doing it with other people. She shares that philosophy through her platform, Soul Treader, and the House Sitting Collective, which I know she's going to tell us more about. But she helps women rediscover freedom through adventure and responsible travel and trust in their own capabilities. So I am delighted. I'm delighted to welcome Belinda to the show. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you, Anna. It's lovely to be here.
No, it's lovely to have you. And I know we're squeezing you in before you set off on another adventure.
Yeah.
Sort of squeezed in between a dose of flu and another big trip. So let's start by you telling listeners a little bit about what your life around alcohol has looked like in the past.
Well, for starters, I didn't actually realise that I had a problem with alcohol until recently when I've looked back over my life. And I think a lot of this happens to a lot of people. But I grew up with alcohol. I'm 60 years old now. And ever since I can remember when I was very young, my parents used to have parties and they'd have pool parties and there'd be alcohol and everybody seemed to get drunk. You know, there wasn't any sort of nothing nasty ever happened. Like there was no sort of alcohol induced wrong behavior or anything like that. And there might have been between the adults, but as a child, you know, we were sort of quite protected in this bubble, like watching television and then, you know, going to bed and all that sort of thing. And so I sort of grew up with thinking that it's fine. It's fine to get drunk. It's fine to have a drink and all this sort of thing. And when I was in high school, I actually drank quite a lot, and I look back at how much I drank and it's quite scary. When I got married, life kind of sort of settled down a little bit. And I had children and I was doing all the mother stuff and, you know, school runs, you know, the whole shebang. And also I was working in corporate as well. And I don't remember drinking so much. I can remember the, you know, having a bottle of wine with my children's father and, you know, but it was never, sometimes there, you know, there'd be wine left in the bottle on the next day. It was never, you know, would never, sometimes we didn't always finish a bottle. Sometimes it was just one glass. But as soon as I separated and started the divorce proceedings, I can remember I started drinking. And, you know, I used to sort of joke about it. You know, a girlfriend, you know, sort of came round and, you know, there were all these bottles, empty bottles stacked up to take down to the recycling. And, you know, and I went, oh, who's those? You know, and I'm kind of laughing about it. And I think back and I think, and she was kind of in the same boat. So she was one of my friends. And you do sort of attract people like this to sort of drink with because, you know, you're all having fun. It's Friday or it's Wednesday or it's Monday or whatever, you know.
Well, it helps normalize it, doesn't it? It helps normalize it. And, yeah. And you know, we can also sort of say, well, I was going through a particularly difficult period at that time. It is almost the standard backdrop to something like that.
And so 10 years later, when I was 55, I looked in the mirror one day and I was unfit, overweight, and still drinking a lot. So that was during COVID. And I can remember that I used to buy the bottles of wine and cartons. I think it was Naked Wines, I think it was called. And, you know, used to get, and the same man who delivered my Naked Wines a monthly or however often I ordered it, would also deliver my fabric because I started sewing, which is another story I'll get into because I actually stopped drinking during that time. And so he was my favourite delivery man. and so much so that I'd reach into the case and give him a bottle of wine, like, thank you for delivering my bottle of wine. I mean, that's how crazy it was. But COVID was a very crazy time for a lot of people. And me especially, even though it wasn't so bad. I had my family around. I felt fulfilled, but I was still so unhealthy and unfit. And I just, you know, midlife, all the hormones and cortisol and everything running around my body, you know, I was a mess. Yeah, an absolute mess. Yeah.
Where was the turnaround for you? Well, you say you looked in the mirror that day and you just felt, you know, overweight and, you know, drinking too much and tired. What did you decide at that point you needed to do? What was the talking to, you know, yourself that you gave?
Okay, I need to do something. So I actually reached out for something that I had been wanting to do for ages. So, and that was hiking. So I used to hike a lot growing up in New Zealand when I was in high school and university. But I hadn't hiked for a long time and I'd often sort of, you know, been at a cafe out in the country or, you know, up in the mountains and seen hikers come through and gone, gosh, you know, that looks really fun. I should get back into that. I should do that, you know. But it was, you know, and then have another glass of wine and forget about it. And so it was that day that I thought, you know, I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that. But my main focus was to get fit and go outside and enjoy the outdoors and get fit. You know, stopping drinking just wasn't a part of the equation because I didn't have a problem. And so that was when I started to hike. And my first hike was 17 kilometres, 12 miles, so it wasn't long, but it was down a steep gully and up the other side. And it was pretty tough. And everyone else in the hiking group was 70 to 80 years old. And they were all glowing, like absolutely glowing, and they were as fit as a fiddle, and they raced down raced down into the gully and up the other side, and here I was sort of after them
bringing up the rear.
And that was a turning point for me to say I want to be like that when I grow up, well, the proverbial grow up.
So you were looking at them thinking, when I'm 80, when I'm 70, when I'm 80, that is the kind of thing I want to be capable of doing, or the kind
Absolutely.
Of thing I'm doing with my life.
Yeah.
So psychologically, after having spent sort of years, you know, not participating in things that quite kept you as fit and possibly drinking too much and stuff like that, what did those early hikes feel like for you psychologically?
Oh my gosh. Amazing. I was on a total high. I remember coming back from this one particular hike and I was in the rainforest, which is, you know, in the this gorgeous national park in the hinterland behind where I lived. And, you know, it really, it had Avatar vibes, you know, just huge, big, glossy green leaves and dripping water and, you know, tree snakes and vines and all sorts of really cool stuff. So it was absolutely amazing. But it was just this huge endorphin hit. And I sort of came home and I was just so happy and so pleased with myself, poured myself a glass of wine to celebrate. And I can remember stopping off and buying a really nice bottle of Chardonnay so I can have a nice glass of wine when I got home to celebrate.
It's interesting though, isn't it? Because I mean, at this point you were, you know, embarking on doing something which you hadn't done for ages, and it was making you feel fantastic about yourself. But wine was still there in the background.
Yeah.
Was still there as a habit. So when those hikes went well, or when you felt really high, still that association of, you know, I can celebrate. I know what's going to make this feel celebratory. I know it's going to feel like a reward right now. Interesting. So when you obviously started hiking, you went back for more. What did it begin to offer to you, Linda, that daily life wasn't providing? I mean, I know the endorphins were there and that stick, but what role did hiking start to take on for you?
Well, I began to get a lot fitter, but I would also go up to that same national park and I would leave at 3 a.m. in the morning. And so I would drive an hour and a half and then hike an hour and a half and catch the sunrise. Now, if I was to drink the night before, that just wouldn't look good. It just wouldn't work. Now, none of the decisions I then made back then were, you know, they just all came about. It was by, you know, sheer design. I started sewing on a Friday night and I wouldn't drink alcohol and I would sew and then I would go to bed and then I would wake up at 3 a.m. and set the alarm for 3 a.m., leave at 3:30 and I'd catch the sunrise. Now, I didn't say right now, I'm not going to drink tonight. I was sewing, so I didn't want to drink. And I remember this, and I only just realized this when I had my first discussion with you, that I wasn't drinking. And the same man who delivered my fabric also delivered my wine. So, I loved him. But I can remember having these big jars of tea on a Friday night. And on Saturday, all the children had part-time jobs and things. So I had my Saturday free. And that's when I'd go up and do a sunrise hike. And, and so it just became a very healthy lifestyle. It became habitual to do that. You know, it was something that I craved to leave that early. And just to put it in perspective as well, in Australia, a lot of people get up early. If anyone here has been to Australia, they'll know that 5 o'clock in the morning, that's when cafes open and everybody's up and running and doing exercise and all this sort of thing. So it really is a cultural thing as well. But everything happened organically. And that's the crazy thing. Everything did happen organically.
Yeah, that's amazing. When I very, very, very often when I coach people and they're in the throes of giving up alcohol, they automatically, you know, sleep improves and they often get up earlier. They have more energy when they wake up, and the question becomes, oh, you know, what do I do with my day? What do I do with that extra time? And obviously the answer is, well, whatever you want to. And very, very often I'd say to them, you know, the best place to start looking is, what did you used to enjoy?
Yeah.
You know, when you were younger and perhaps before alcohol became a pastime and certainly a thief of time, what did you used to do? And it's really fascinating that, you know, you say growing up in New Zealand, I used to walk, you know, used to hike when I was younger. Mm. And you went back to that. There was a natural pull back to that. Which it's so often we don't have to look beyond the things that we enjoyed before to realize what it is that's going to sort of truly nourish us again.
And the same can be said for sewing. I hadn't touched my sewing machine for 30 odd years. You know, it was And, you know, I took it and got it serviced. I really was in the zone when I was sign. And if somebody had offered me a glass of wine, I would have gotten,
The zone. Yeah, but that's so, it's so funny though, isn't it? Because, I mean, I drank for years and years and years and years. Friday nights would have been a big night.
Hmm.
Drinking, you know, for a drinking girl, a Friday night was legitimate drinking night. I was possibly having to sort of hide it a little bit more on the Mondays and Tuesdays and the Wednesdays, but Friday was game on.
Yeah.
I find it fascinating and brilliant, obviously, that a Friday for you was a non-drinking night that you hadn't even really clocked was a non-drinking night because you were so in the flow of doing something which you truly loved. It just underpins the point so much that we are engrossed in something that is truly nourishing us. Alcohol loses its grip, you know, in that moment for sure, but also time, it just becomes irrelevant. It's like, well, what am I going to have? Why would I do that?
Yeah, exactly.
and also you had another point of almost discipline in there as well, where you were like, I've got a challenge tomorrow.
Yeah.
Challenge myself. I'm off up into the park, going walking. I want to be on tip top form. So you weren't just involved in something you enjoyed doing. You were about to embark on something you enjoyed doing even more.
Yeah,
for which there was a damn good reason not hungover.
And yeah, the funny thing is that, you know, everything was subconscious. None of it was a conscious decision. It really wasn't. And I do think I was an alcoholic. I was a functional alcoholic. I don't say that with pride, but
No. I know what you mean, but I think, you know, sometimes with yourself, as is the case with so many people, there wasn't a sort of a rock bottom dramatic and chaotic end to your drinking. It was a looking in the mirror one day and saying, I can't do this anymore, or I don't like what I'm seeing. And I'm in this perspective. I mean, literally, I feel older than my years. I feel tired all the time.
Yeah.
I feel fit, and I'm, you know, and I can see people 20 years older than me who are younger than me.
Yeah, yeah. And that really, to me, was the turning point. Still a subconscious decision not to drink, but it was a turning point. And I still think back to that time, you know, to that day. It still amazed me. And, you know, I want to be that old. I want to be that old and that active at that age.
I do an exercise with clients a lot, which is the future self. And, you know, we do say, you know, roll the clock forward 20 years. You know, obviously there's ways of doing this and coaching out of people rather than just, you know, this abridged version that I'll talk about now. But it literally is an exercise in visualizing, you know, what kind of person do you want to be? How are you going to fill your time? What does your home look like? What's the aura around you? What's the feeling that you have when you do your hobbies? What are those hobbies? You know, how do you live? How do you eat? How do you nourish yourself? All those things. And it's, for a lot of people in the throes of drinking, it can be a very difficult exercise because you think, well, I know what I'd like, but I don't know how to get there.
Yeah.
And obviously there's help needed and there's coaching involved in, and even overcoming those limiting beliefs, that's possible. Mm. But having that future sense of self becomes your why. You know, I want to become that person. And I think, you know, it's amazing when you go off on a hike like you did.
And it is quite interesting because, you know, a lot of people say, oh my gosh, your life looks amazing. You know, you've taken early retirement and you run around the world hiking and you must be very rich, or life must be fun. You must be having cocktails on the beach everywhere and, you know, or on the mountains or whatever, you know, all the time. But the thing is that now I just get enjoyment out of the simple things in life, and, you know, and I live frugally. I probably spend about a fifth of what I used to when I used to live in four walls and in corporate, you know, in a house in the suburbs and work in corporate, a fifth, not even that. And it is interesting to, when you do fully replace what you want to do and a life purpose with what you weren't 100% happy with. So,
you're speaking my language, because I think, you know, once alcohol is out of the way, you do begin to tap more into inherently what's important to you and feel, you know, feel that more clearly. It's the clarity. It's the clarity that comes along. And let's be honest. I mean, if we're drinking to a level where, you know, we're having naked wine deliveries every month and, you know, we're looking back and saying I was definitely an alcoholic in that stage of my life, et cetera, then the sheer amount of money that we're spending on alcohol, full stop, is enough to pay your trip. Seriously, I was absolutely gobsmacked when I sat down and did the maths with regards to my own drinking and the annual savings. You know, we'll go into it, but it's, and actually once you do start to obviously appreciate the simple things in life, then they often come with a much lower price tag than some of the other things we used to hanker for. So, okay, let me ask you though, because I do know you were very honest when we met and you said it's only really very recently. I mean, alcohol sort of lost its grip. You carried on drinking. You didn't sort of say I'm giving up 10 years ago. It's a relatively recent thing for you, isn't it? So those years between those first hikes and your more recent decision to stop, what's shifted for you? Why have you recently decided to give up the booze, as it were?
Because I realized that I was drinking for emotional support. And that was the big one. The one thing that I used to love thinking about, because when people are on a multi-day hike, usually the top of conversation in the last couple of days is, what is your first meal going to be? And mine's always steak, chips and a glass of wine, you know, but the proverbial glass of wine, as many glasses of wine as it takes. And that was my go-to. And that was probably the only celebration drink that I would kind of have. And I'd noticed that a lot of the time when I was stressed, and I did have a very, very stressful period with work. So, but a lot of the time when I was stressed or I was lonely or I was sad or any sort of negative sort of emotion, I would reach for the bottle, whether that be wine or a spirit or whatever. And I just suddenly realized, what am I doing? Like, what on earth am I doing? Like, I just couldn't believe it. And because the stretches between when I was drinking were sort of, you know, getting my drinking bouts were getting more far and few between, but they were getting probably stronger. Like, you know, I wake up in the morning, gosh, I needed that last night. Well, actually, no, I didn't need it. And I feel like shit. And I suddenly started to realize, what on earth are you doing? You are not getting any younger. And I was probably late 50s when I decided that I would stop. And I think I had my last drink the night before my 60th birthday.
Oh, congratulations. it was a bit of a slow unfolding then, really, wasn't it? You know, the bringing things like the hiking back into your life and increasing the scale with which you were involved in that meant that you were going through quite long periods of time when you were out about and having a great time and feeling nourished in other ways. And then they stand in stark contrast to the times when you're back home, sort of face planting into a bottle of gin because something in that environment is triggering.
Yeah.
And it does, it makes you realize, okay, this is weird. It's strange. So how do you navigate disappointment or difficult emotions now? Because obviously, you know, we do know that taking alcohol out of the equation doesn't solve all of these difficult emotions.
No, it doesn't. Actually, there has been a couple of times where I have, you know, almost walked out the door down to the shop to buy a bottle of wine. Mm. And I've gone, no, I'm not going to. I'm absolutely not going to. And I look back on what I used to do in terms of relaxation and that sort of thing. And I used to do a lot of yoga. I used to do a lot of yin yoga. So I started to sort of try and find some great yin yoga online, and I'd darken the room and I'd get into some stretching and get my fascia, you know, all nice and moist again, and, you know, and just really try and nourish my body that way. And that actually worked. And then I got into this, the whole thing about sort of, you know, breathing through left nostril, right nostril, you know, so breathing yeah. through your right nostril sort of, you know, wakes you up, left nostril sort of, you know, brings you calm. And so I just started to try and do a few of these things. Did it work to start off with? No. Why? Because I told myself that they weren't working. I told myself that they weren't working, and no, I really didn't need a wine. It's just much easier. Let's just go and get a wine. And I just had to persevere. And here I am. And you know, and what is it? 3, 4, nearly 5 months later. So yeah, I'm doing okay. I'm doing okay, but it's not easy. It's not an easy fix. I mean, you know, I almost think that giving up smoking is, you know, is probably easier. I mean, I did smoke for quite some time when I was, you know, when I was younger, and I can remember just stopping one day and didn't even think anything of it. And yeah, I think it's because it's just so normalized. You know, you go out to dinner, you go to friends' places, you know, anywhere you want. I house sit in between my hikes. I house sit. So a lot of the time I try and get these lovely big houses out in the country, take dogs for walks all the time with my partner. And we really do live the healthy life when we do that sort of thing. And quite often the only way that we can get a drink is to get a Tesco grocery delivery, and we do that on purpose. And so yeah, so we actually try and live without alcohol, and it's just becoming easier. Yeah,
it does become yeah. easier. But you're absolutely right, and I love the fact that you don't gloss over it and say it's, you know, easy peasy and without its friction. It's not. In my book I talk about the fact that, you know, alcohol for many of us becomes our CEO. It's our chief emotions officer.
Mm.
It's a thing which we, you know, use to manage our emotions, as you highlighted you were doing. When you sack it or, you know, aspire to make it redundant, you've got to start doing the job yourself. Mm. You're not delegating anymore. Get hands-on. And things like, you know, the breathing that you talked about, mm. the other tools, they're not for everybody. And you can sit there, and I was very, very skeptical about mm. half of the things that I now do routinely, but it's mm. just, and they don't work for everybody, you know. One yeah. tool for somebody isn't another person's, you know, guaranteed success either. So, but it is about saying, I want this enough that I'm going to try different things, and I don't have to be perfect to begin with. In fact, I could be an absolute amateur quite a long time. You know, honestly, you know, yeah. so my take on things like mindfulness and yoga some people might look at and sort of snigger.
Yeah.
But the truth is, you know, it's about working out what works for you, not giving up on them if they don't work.
Yeah.
And see, you know, straight away. You know, you mentioned breath work. It's absolutely a brilliant practice, that left nostril, right nostril, sort of managing your parasympathetic, sympathetic, you know, nervous system. It is great, but you can feel like a complete prat, you know, whilst yeah. you're going through those playful experimentations.
But
it is worth pursuing.
Yeah, no, it is. But yes, it is messy. It's not as nice as I would have thought, you know, like, because you see all these people on, especially the influencers with their, you know, non-alcoholic spirits, which absolutely cost a fortune and shouldn't. I mean, they're technically, you know, posh cordials, really, aren't they?
Some of them. I'm putting a caveat on some of them.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Before I get inundated with them.
So. Yeah. you know, and they say, oh, yes, and stop drinking and, you know, and 12 months sober or whatever, you know, whatever it is, how many, you know, months or years or days sober. And yes, that's great. But what about the people who find that just so hard and they keep, you know, especially if they've had a very traumatic past and alcohol seems like that friend, and that can be the friend that you, what is it called? A frenemy?
Frenemy.
Yeah. You know, because, yeah, it's just, I can imagine it would be very, very hard.
Yeah. I've come across many times, obviously, people who have said that those stories of, you know, sort of slightly disingenuous stories of how easy it is can be really damaging, because unless you find it that easy soon, you kind of give up and say, well, I'm doing this wrong. Or, you know, you just feel like a failure in your early days of trying. So I think, as with all these things, I would always sort of preach the honesty and vulnerability and truthfulness on this, are by far the most inspiring ways forward, to be honest. But yeah, I mean, so I think some people do find it obviously easier than others.
Yeah, yeah. There's a thing in hiking called hike your own hike. So that's, it's a kind of like a saying with all hikers, multi-day hikers. It's kind of like an Americanism. And it basically means when you're on the trail, it doesn't matter what you're wearing, what you're doing, you know, how you walk, you know, what you look like, what you're eating. You know, if you want to eat jelly beans for the whole 2 weeks of your hike, eat jelly beans. It doesn't really matter. Nobody's there to judge you. Hike your own hike. And I do have that philosophy with me when I'm hiking as well. And, you know, you don't need all the latest gear. You don't need to, you know, tick all these boxes. And I feel like I've taken that philosophy with on this non-alcoholic journey with me as well. Like, you know, I'll do it my way. And, you know, and I'm going to be honest, if I had a drink, you know, tonight, if something really tipped me over the edge and I had a drink, I'm just going to pick myself up and put myself back on the bike. I hope it doesn't, but it might, you know. And I mean, I am, you know, walking my own walk, and I don't really have to prove anything to anybody except for myself, you know?
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah, it's a brilliant philosophy. One of the environments in which I coach, along with a fellow coach, Tab and I have a community of women who are all doing this, ditching the booze together. And in that community, it's really easy to fall into a rut of thinking, oh, so-and-so is further ahead on this than I am. Or so-and-so is putting together, you know, some alcohol-free days and I'm still struggling. And, you know, that comparison, we talk about it as being the thief of joy. It can only ever leave, if you're looking at someone else and sort of comparing yourself to their successes, it can only ever really feel you know, like you're sort of underachieving. And of course it is exactly as you say, it is your journey. All the factors that have brought you to this place today, you know, the drinker that you are, the conditioning that you've had in the past, the emotions that you're trying to manage, the environment in which you're living in, the architecture of your life, the stresses of your job, they are uniquely and individually yours. And it is, you know, it's to look at somebody else and to draw comparisons against the pace or the speed or the ease with which they are navigating the path is really unhelpful. And it also just means you never celebrate your own wins.
Yeah.
You know, you never celebrate your own progress if you're actually just competing subconsciously with somebody else.
Well, that's actually quite interesting, because I am doing this when I am away from all of my friends and family. So my friends and family are all in the in Australia, bar three, like four of really good friends I have in the UK, but they're kind of spread out far and few between. So, you know, I haven't seen them since I've stopped drinking, but they're also the type of people that wouldn't really hold any judgment. And they're probably, you know, reaching for the kombucha out of their refrigerator anyway. So it doesn't really matter. But It is. I must say, it is a lot easier as I'm on my own. When I say I'm on my own, I have my partner with me, but I'm not surrounded by what were historically people I would drink with, and that makes a huge difference. And that's another thing, that, you know, isolating myself and doing these house sits, doing house sits right out in the country. It's just great. I am actually removing myself from my home. I'm removing myself from anything that I can associate with wine, you know, my favorite wine glass, my alcohol cupboard, you know, anything like that. I have totally removed myself from it. So that has made a huge difference as well. And that's made it easier.
I'm sure it has, because one of the sort of fundamentals would be, well, you know, try and change up your rituals, try and look at the environment. So here's the thing. Most people who I come across who struggle with alcohol and changing their behavior with alcohol aren't lacking discipline or willpower or anything like that. They're just not necessarily looking at the environmental factors that contribute to the drinking.
Yeah.
So they're trying to change the behavior without changing the facts of their life that might conspire to their drinking. And, you know, we would look at, I help people look at what those factors might be and see how we can sort of eliminate those just to ease and facilitate the alcohol reduction. You've got a whole different level than deciding going to go and sit in someone else's house for 3 weeks or whatever. But the principle's the same. It's, you know, take yourself out of, to whatever degree you can.
Yeah.
Yourself out of the normal, and shake it up a bit and try something new.
Yes, and you can say that for hiking as well. So when I started to do multi-day hikes, well, not when I started, but right from the very first multi-day hike, I don't drink when I'm out on the trail. I started to do them when I was solo, so I kind of need to have my wits about me, but I don't really particularly want to take drink anyway, because every gram counts that you're carrying. It just lends itself to not needing to drink. And that's a prime example of taking myself right out of the drinking environment. It really is. When I'm out in the wilderness, I have no desire to drink whatsoever, absolutely no desire.
So how has your sense of self shifted through your experiences?
Okay, so I'm not going to say, oh my God, I'm so proud of myself, I feel amazing. I have just quietly done it. I haven't applauded myself. I've just really started to enjoy other things. I've started to learn to teach myself to code.
Wow.
With the help of AI. AI helps, but I'm actually pulling mistakes up that AI is doing now, which is really cool. But I've always wanted to, you know, I knew basic HTML, but I'm starting to do things like that, and I'm getting more enjoyment I'm celebrating more with what I'm achieving because alcohol isn't there. The fact that I'm not drinking, it's like, yeah, whatever. No, I haven't seen that friend for a long time. No, in fact, I haven't really thought about that friend, you know.
Talk about what you do now in terms of Soul Treader and the experiences that you, I guess, curate in a way. Or other people? What's your purpose and your mission there?
So part of the reason why I started Hot Soul Treader was so many people were saying, oh my God, how do you do that? Do you know, how do you, you know, can you show me how you hike or tell me about it? I'd love to hear about it. So I decided I'd start a blog. And this is when I stopped doing corporate and I decided, right, okay, I'm going to fill my life with doing this. I want to be a blogger. And that's how it actually started. And then I got right into safety, health and safety on the trail. You know, I'm a wilderness first aider, and I've really got into the, you know, how to do it right. And I've actually got a book on my website, and it's just a free resource. If anyone wants to get into hiking, it's called Hike It Right, Health and Safety and Hygiene on the Trail, which is actually really important to, mm-hmm. if you're going to start hiking, to actually do it properly. And it's a great, it's not a novel, it's just basically a handbook. And then I actually realized that I can be a voice for people who are reaching middle age. Middle age is quite a scary time for a lot of people. A lot of people can sort of look back over their lives and go, gosh, I wish I had, I wish I shoulda, woulda, coulda, you know.
Yeah.
And also, or they, you know, they might go, oh my gosh, you know, they might have aging parents, they might have wayward children, they might have, you know, sick partners, all sorts of things, you know,
all of the above.
Yeah, which are happening in midlife. And so I kind of wanted to be a beacon of hope for women, but I now have just as many men followers on my Soul Treader as women, so, which is great, which is really good. I really like that, because a lot of men, you know, there's so much out there for women in midlife, but men feel it just as bad. You know, they get hit just as hard, and even more so. I mean, the suicide rate with midlife men in New Zealand is just insane. It is, so, and that's sad, and it shouldn't be like that. It just shouldn't be like that. These are the golden years, you know.
So what do you feel, what feedback do you get that you're helping people discover? What are they discovering about themselves?
They're basically discovering that life, the midlife, isn't just what I've been programmed to do. So I've been programmed, you know, my kids might have left university, but I still need to ring them up every day and make sure that they're okay. I play golf, I join my friends for drinks, or I do this or I do that, and I do the same thing day after day after day after day. And all of a sudden, you know, that they're in this rut, and it's really, really hard to stop anything like alcohol. It's hard to stop, you know, if you are smoking, if you're in Europe and you're a smoker, it's hard to stop smoking. It's hard to do so many things. Maybe you have a prescription drug addiction, which is just so common. And if, you know, if that's you, I feel for you. And you know, the one thing that I can say is that if you can find something that you truly love, which truly inspires you, like watching a sunrise, watching a sunset, but in a beautiful idyllic place, and you can get to that, or maybe even just walk amongst the trees and, you know, let nature do its healing, and that will come into the forefront of your thinking and your actions and your daily actions. And I make it sound very, very simple, but you know, it's actually baby steps.
I was going to say, I know it's in a way it is very simple. It's not easy. But a lot of the things that you're talking about here are actually quite simple, aren't they? You're talking about sunsets and nature and stepping outside. Yeah. And obviously, where you live in the world and, you know, the environment you live differs enormously. But the principles, I think, because I was about to say to you, what would you say to someone stuck in a life where alcohol has become their main relief valve, or they just feel stuck in a rut and therefore something like alcohol is more likely to make an appearance? It is about thinking about what lights you up.
Thinking about
how you can bring, through baby steps, you know, a little bit more of that into your life. I love that. I love that, Belinda. Right. How do people find out more about Soul Treader and what you do in the House of the Collective? How do they find out? How do they find you?
Okay, so soultreader.com is my hiking blog. I have a lot of information on there, what to pack, day packs, what to wear, basic first aid, all sorts of good stuff, you know, and also some hiking guides. So if anyone's interested in doing some multi-day hikes, that's a great way to get started, is just to go to my website and just start having a browse around and a read. And hopefully that inspires you. If anyone is interested in house sitting, which is a great way to actually remove yourself from your home and put yourself somewhere completely different, it doesn't cost. It's a great way to go on holiday without, with no charge for accommodation, and you can actually go somewhere. You know, when we do go to, say we go to New York for the weekend or London for the weekend or whatever, we're going to spend a fortune on hotels, restaurants, and there'll be alcohol as well. You know, I mean, it doesn't have to be alcohol, but it's very hard when you're meeting people for dinner and you're, you know, drinking wine and all that sort of thing. But if you actually at somebody's house and cooking your own meal, it's much easier to not have a wine, and you're in a new environment, you know. And so if anyone is interested in house sitting, I have the House Sitting Collective, which teaches you how to do it right.
It's brilliant. Yeah. Well, I will put the contact details and links into the show notes. This conversation has been everything I wanted it to be. It's a, you know, I think it's a brilliant example of how you, for want of a better term, you know, properly reconnected with yourself through challenge, through adventure. For other people, it may be different nutrients. It might be other things that they need in their life. But the point is, if you can bring them into your life, that in itself often helps create a life where alcohol becomes less relevant, to a point where you can then say, why is it here at all? Why is it here at all? It doesn't have to start with ditching the alcohol first. It's creating a life that you don't want to escape from. Amazing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Belinda. I hope your next hike goes really, really well. I know you're off soon, so wishing you all the very, very best for that.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for listening and getting curious. Please rate, review, and follow this podcast on Apple or Spotify or wherever you're choosing to listen. It really helps other people find the show. And don't forget to tune in to the next episode. And you can find all of my resources and become part of the Big Drink Rethink by heading to my website, thebigdrinkrethink.com.